This program is brought to you by Chefs Collaborative, a nonprofit with a mission to inspire, educate, and celebrate chefs and food professionals building a better food system. Change menus, change lives. Learn more at chefscollaborative.org.
Thank you for listening to Heritage Radio Network. We are a member-supported nonprofit food radio station. That means that every single thing we do, from broadcasting 35 weekly shows for free, to bringing you exclusive content from sold-out food events across the country, to offering scholarships to high school students, is only possible thanks to the support of our loyal members. And we want you to join the club. Become a member during our 2017 summer drive to get access to sweet swag and pledge your support to the world's only food radio station. Visit heritageradionetwork.org/donate to become a member now.
This is Cynthia Cherish Malloran, Reverend and DJ Cherish the Love, and you are listening to Wedding Cake on Heritage Radio Network. Before I forget, let me tell you how to reach out to me and get my attention on social media, Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook at DJ Cherish the Love. That is love spelled L-U-V, and hashtag using Wedding Cake, all one word, or Heritage_Radio, and hashtag RevLove. So welcome to the sixth episode of the first season of Wedding Cake, a sweet revenge on my own wedding day years ago when I didn't get to have cake because I eloped in Vegas. So that marriage didn't work out, but I still love weddings. I love DJing them. I love writing the ceremonies and officiating them. I even love coordinating the surprise marriage proposals around New York City. So reach out to me if you're planning on popping the question. I can coach you, and together we can make it epic. And the best part of the show, every week we eat wedding cake on air. And because I'm not bitter and I love love, I decided I should have my cake every week and eat it too. So speaking of DJing, I DJ Cherish the Love. I'm Whole Foods NYC's official DJ, so come and hang and eat and listen to my select tunes at the Harbor Bar every first Tuesday of every month, 6 to 8 p.m., Bryant Park, New York City. In July, it will be on July 5th, Wednesday, because of the Independence Day holiday. So last night, I DJed at this cool place everyone needs to check out on Bleecker Street, Carroll Place, formerly known as Kenny's Castaways. I DJed a great event for Viacom Comedy Central, a very special farewell party for one of the coolest people I know. So you also might remember my voice from my previous show on Heritage Radio Network, Primary Food. It hasn't gone away. It still very much lives. So search for it on iTunes and Stitcher because there are many, many gems about life and creativity from my healing of cancer. And I will be back on the Primary Food, but since it is wedding season, I figured we should all have cake and talk about love. So listeners, listen up. You can call in live, 718-497-2128. 718-497-2128. This show, Wedding Cake, is produced by Heritage Radio Network, a nonprofit, member-supported radio station devoted to all things food. So help keep Heritage Radio Network alive by becoming a member today. Go to heritageradionetwork.org and click on the beating heart to donate. Do it now, and I will love you forever. So today's guest sitting here with me, first of all, my fake fiancé, my best friend forever, Joanne. Hello, hello.
Hello.
So, you know, people always say they married their best friend, right? So we're going to be fiancés today. So tell everyone how, David, tell everyone how you proposed to me.
Well, when I proposed to you, I took you to a taping of Wheel of Fortune. And because you're really, really good at Wheel of Fortune. And I had them spell out, "Will you marry me?" And you got it after just one letter turn, because that's how good you are at Wheel of Fortune.
That's true. I am like eerily good at Wheel of Fortune. So yeah, that's like I said, every episode I will have a fake fiance or fiance because I will swing both ways on air. So in upcoming episodes, we will have Hopelessly Perpetually Single Lady, to balance all the sweet goodness. She's a little bit bitter. The Forever Bridesmaid will join us from LA to tell us about her crazy wedding experiences. We will also have guest Zillas and nutrition advice givers so you can fit into that impossibly small wedding dress that we all insist on buying. And I'm so excited, we're also going to have psychics in studio too to help with all your relationship questions and day of questions. So I advise you to subscribe to Wedding Cake now on iTunes. Cake and psychics. Oh, come on. I mean, oh, I also have another special guest coming on. He was on Weekend at Bernie's, and I think the sequel. And he's going to come in and talk about Viagra for some reason. So that's next week. So come in, subscribe, so you don't miss that. That's true. He's coming in. So today's wedding cake was brought to the studio, actually, by my fiancé, Joanne. And tell us where this cake is from.
Well, today we have a very tasty-looking cake from Cupcake Market. They're on East 7th Street in the East Village. And they had a few different flavors to choose from, but I went with the strawberry because the person at the store told me a little something about this. It makes it, I think, a little extra special is that at Cupcake Market, they make their own strawberry jam in-house, and they use that to flavor the frosting. So it's a vanilla cake with strawberry frosting with fresh jam in it.
So you should look at the pictures on heritageradionetwork.org for this episode, because this cake is so adorable. Usually it comes in with a slice or two. This is a little 4-inch cake, kind of like those wedding taster cakes. So please cut into it, and we will eat it during this episode. So, Joanne, you not being only my best friend and personal cake delivery person today, Joanne was also the witness at my wedding years ago when I eloped in Vegas, and I did it all wrong, and it ended up terribly. So this is why we have another very special guest on today to talk about eloping, and that's why this episode is called How to Elope, Why You Might Want to Elope, Heritage Radio Network's very own Jennifer Liuzzi.
Thank you. Thank you.
Host
really,
of Tech
so,
Bites.
So honored to be here. So honored to be here.
Oh, this studio audience crowd, I love them. They always know when to clap, right? So I saw an online article about elopement, and it was entitled on ABC News, Stressed Out Americans Embrace Elopement. I think that was so funny. So what is an elopement? This is a definition I found. An elopement is an intimate alternative to a frou-frou wedding. You won't get overwhelmed with stressful wedding planning checklists and stuff. Okay, so if you're frazzled by time and figuring out the money that you need to plan a big wedding, you might want to consider a very attractive option, elopement. So let's talk about my elopement first, because that was just a mess. And Joanne, you can chime in too, because you were there. So once we decided to elope and we decided to go to Vegas, after my then fiance ran to my parents' place and, quote, asked my dad for my hand in marriage. It was so bizarre.
This
so
is already
awkward.
Why it's not going well. I just have to jump in. I mean, so far you've already told like 5 people. Rule number one of a successful elopement is tell no one.
Don't talk about elopement unless
they are a vendor.
Okay, pause on that, because that's really important. So once we were in Vegas, immediately I already felt like everything was like all wrong. Like my gut was like, oh, this is not right. It just felt like the wrong setting, the wrong timing, maybe the wrong guy, maybe. But my guilty conscience voice kicked in because my cousins flew in to be there. So obviously the irrationality went.
I think this is just a small wedding. I don't even think it's an elopement. I think it's just a very, very small, intimate wedding.
It was super, super last minute that they decided to fly in.
And on the fly. Small wedding on the fly.
You know what? I think I might have to recategorize my elopement as such. Because, you know, once they were there and I said, they're here. Out of guilt, I think I need to get married. I knew something was probably going to go wrong. So the officiant, she was really lovely, very sizable, jovial woman wearing a lei, and a Hawaiian muumuu dress. Do you remember that, Joanne?
She was great.
She was great. And she has such like power behind her.
Were Were you at one of the wedding chapels?
It was kind of like more like a municipal kind of thing. And I asked for the Elvis and he was already booked. Oh. He actually was. And that's who I got. I got her and she was wonderful. And then afterwards, because we were in Vegas, no, we didn't go to a casino. We went to a shooting range and fired sniper rifles, magnums, pistols, shotguns, and AK-47s.
I skipped that part.
You skipped that part.
I don't like loud noises.
You don't like guns? Yeah, I don't like guns either, but somehow we were that's what we decided to do. So in essence, I had a machine gun wedding. So, Jen, tell us your story.
Wow.
Yeah, wow is right.
Wow.
Wow is right.
I mean, I almost feel like we could take the whole show to just sort of, you know,
analyze that
and bring you like bring therapy. You into the light from your machine gun wedding.
Oh my God, this cake!
The cake is delicious,
amazing,
really good,
and the strawberry, the fresh strawberry jam filling is as good as advertised.
Cupcake Market,
really yummy.
Oh, so good.
I took a super small piece, but I might be going in for some more later.
Yes, you will. So June 3rd, 2004, 13 years ago.
13 years ago. So I had an actual real elopement.
Not a fake elopement tiny bad wedding.
Yeah, not a small spontaneous event with firearms. So my elopement, my partner and I had been together for about 3 years, and we were on a trip to South Beach. And we were out one night, and he looked at me and said, I think we should get married. And I said, really? And he said, yes.
David, where's that button?
Well, I'm going to be telling this story for a long time.
So get ready with that button.
Yeah, I'll prepare an awe at the right moment.
Load it all up.
Don't try to force the awe, Cynthia. It comes when it comes.
I'm trying to be controlling. Okay.
It's the producer in you.
I know. I can't help it.
Okay. So he said, we should get married. I said, really? And he said, yes, I want to marry you. And I said, okay. And that was kind of it.
Exactly.
And I'm from Hawaii, the island of Oahu. I grew up in a town called Kalihi. So I grew up a lot on the beach.
I love Oahu.
Oahu.
So great.
Part Hawaiian, part Filipino, which is why
Cherish and I
get along so well. Part of why we're friends. And he is from the south of France, so he grew up on the beach as well. So he said to me, I think we should get married on the beach, and I think we should get married in Hawaii because that's important, because that's where you're from. And I said, okay. And then he said, and I think it should just be the two of us. And I said, okay, just the two of us. And he said, and we'll get you a nice diamond ring. And I said, well, if we want it to just be the two of us, I can't get an engagement ring because then people will know, but it's okay. I'll get a diamond band after.
Okay.
So we were in South Beach for the weekend and we talked about it for the weekend. And at the time he was working in San Francisco and I was working in New York. And basically what we did is we sat down and we looked at the calendar, and the first opportunity that we both had to take a week off of work is when we decided to get married.
Oh, wow.
And we really wanted to elope, to be together and to spend the time just the two of us, because we had spent so much time apart and we were very interested in just kind of capturing the time together. And, you know, it was sort of incidental and a result of the desire to just be together that meant we needed to exclude other people.
Oh.
So when we decided that we wanted to get married on the beach in Hawaii and we just wanted it to be the two of us, I said, well, we have to do it on a different island, because if we do it on my island, we're going to run into my grandfather, like having coffee at the shopping mall, or, you know, my cousins at the beach, and then it'll sort of give it all away and be a disaster. So we need to go to another island. So we decided to go to Maui, and we didn't tell anyone at all. No friends, no family, no people we worked with. We really just kept it to ourselves, because like anything, you know, the privacy setting on Facebook is not private. And as soon as you tell somebody something, it doesn't matter if they promise not to tell. Other people will know and other people will find out. So we decided we weren't telling anyone except our vendors. And the week that we identified was the first week in June. And I think we had this conversation. We decided to get married at the end of February. So that gave us about 3 months to prepare.
Wow. So how did it feel holding that kind of secret from friends and family as you'd see them over the next few months? Did it feel good, or did
it feel
like...
Well, there was a little bit of it where we were also older. I was in my 30s. He was in his 30s. So we were well out of the house and out of home and that kind of thing. You know, there was a part of it where it was nice. It was nice. It was just the two of us in this little bubble of getting married. And again, we were having a long distance relationship for a few years at that time. So having this thing that was just ours and the two of us was really lovely.
Wow, that sounds so nice, actually.
Really, really lovely. And so, you know, after it all came out that we got married, you know, my mother was the most upset about it, I think. And she was upset about the idea of my being alone, going to look for a wedding dress, going to get shoes, going to, you know, look at photo albums and announcements, because even though we eloped, we did all of the traditional things. Mm-hmm. And she was sad for me that I was alone. And, you know, I said to her, don't be sad for me, because I wasn't sad.
Right.
At
right.
all. You know, it was very joyful and it was exciting. And, you know, I had a dress made, so I didn't need to dye it because the dress fit me. I didn't have to fit the dress. That's a just general wedding life tip to anybody. If you want to look great, make the clothes fit you and not the other way around. Custom looks like $1 million all the time.
Yes. Yeah. What's that quote about custom that we just came across, best friend?
Oh, let me pull it out. It's a good one.
It's a really good quote. Okay, so while you pull that up.
So I looked for, you know, we were going to get married on the beach. I looked for a dress. I couldn't find what I wanted. That was white. I got one made. He got a suit. We wanted to let people know that we got married. So we had beautiful announcements. We had hand-done calligraphy to do the text, and then it was hand letter press on, like, beautiful handmade paper. So we had announcements made that we took with us to Hawaii that we mailed from the post office there the day after. We got rings. I had flowers. I had my hair done. He never saw the dress.
You did the whole thing.
We did the whole thing.
The whole
and then
thing.
I went to see my mom one weekend. And, you know, at the time, my husband and I were going to a lot of fancy, like, charity events and dinner parties. And so I asked her to borrow a pair of earring jackets to wear an alleged event. I was like, oh, you know, I'm going to this thing in June, and those would be great. Can I borrow those?
Tricky.
So I wound up having something borrowed. And we did all the things. We had a photographer, because photos were going to be extremely important to share with people after the fact. I have amazing wedding photos. And I had flowers. We did a little dinner on the beach at the hotel, just the two of us in a cabana. We had a tiny little white cake.
Like
we drank
cake
champagne.
We have today.
So it was really beautiful and lovely. And we did all the stuff. But it was just the two of us.
So that is so... Every time you say just the two of us, it feels so lovely. I work with wedding clients all the time. And it's like, oh, it's just the six of us planning this wedding, or just the 12 of us, or just the three of us. And that is so stressful. So your wedding dress, you had it custom made. Did you find that to be expensive, worth it, or?
Well, it was actually far less expensive than the traditional wedding dresses. And my idea was, I'm just going to go to a department store, walk out, you know, go shopping on Madison Avenue and find a white dress that, you know, didn't have a train, but maybe was long, that I could wear on the beach. Uh-huh. And for whatever reason, that year, there was a lot of yellow, pink, camo. There were, like, camouflage print gowns.
Camo.
I went up and down Madison Avenue, and I'm like, you know, come on, Tom Ford, help me out, you know? Nothing. So then I made the tour of the wedding shops, and I could not turn the corner on that kind of money. You know, I could not turn the corner on $5,000 for a dress that I was only going to, that was really a wedding dress. I went to, exactly, thank you.
Most exactly that, yes.
And so there's a shop in the East Village. I don't know if it's still there. It's called Blue on Avenue A on the Park. And she does cocktail and dresses to order. So you walk in and she has a rack of samples and you try them on. And I tried my dress on. And when I tried it on, the sample was actually black chiffon. Mm-hmm. And it was lovely. And I said, yeah, I'll take this in white. And it took 4 weeks to make. And that was it. And it was perfect. It doesn't look like a wedding dress, but it was perfect for a wedding on the beach.
I'm going to say something so crazy. Yeah, I agree with you to have your dress made to fit you.
Yes.
Because then you'd be comfortable and all that.
It fit me perfectly.
Yeah. And then, you know, and if you do have to spend a little bit of extra money, this is this quote that I came across yesterday. The bitterness of poor quality remains long after the sweetness of low price is forgotten.
Yes.
And I think that is really, really great.
Or, you know, like you get what you pay for.
Yeah, exactly. That's the long-winded, you know, Italian translation version of that, because that was from my Italian atelier. So let's talk about the benefits of having, of eloping versus planning out the whole big, you know, you sent me a link, that wedding, the $6.3 million wedding.
Yes, it was on Yahoo News.
So you didn't miss any of that? You don't feel like you got left out of that?
You know, I don't. We spent a week on Maui. We were in a beautiful hotel on the beach. When I told them I was Hawaiian local girl coming back to get married, they upgraded us and put us in a giant one bedroom suite on the water. We got there, I think, on a Sunday or a Monday. We got the marriage license and all that. We got married on Wednesday and then stayed for a couple more days. So we had a wedding honeymoon combo.
Uh-huh.
And it was perfect. There was no stress. Nobody complained about the hotel, their flight. They don't like their dress. They didn't get the chicken. They wanted the fish. The in-laws, the this, the bar, the that. We just had the most wonderful time.
So for someone who's listening right now and is like, well, where would I even begin to start planning this? What are the logistics?
So this was in 2004. So we had the internet, and that was a very useful tool. And I started looking for wedding photographer, you know, wedding officiant. And of course, Hawaii is a very, very popular wedding destination. So I got 1,000 hits on everything. So I started sorting through it, and I'm pretty intrepid when it comes to planning and research. But I had this flash of, oh my God, I'm going to hire a wedding photographer and they're not going to show up. Or some like stoned surfer dude is going to show up with like a disposable Kodak camera and flip flops. And I'm going to have terrible pictures. And I need good pictures because I'm going to have to give, you know, our parents something tangible at some point. And then the same thing with the florists and, you know, all those kinds of things, because it's, you know, even though we were eloping, it's still the one moment. You know, you have this one moment. So what I did is I said at first, okay, well, maybe we'll just get married at the hotel. And when I called the hotels and said, we want to get married on the beach, it's just the two of us. Of course, this is a very, very common request. All the hotel beaches are private, and they are going to charge you $5,000 to walk onto the beach and get married, even if it's just the two of you. And I was like, mm-hmm. I don't think you understand what I'm saying to you. We're two people. And they're like, yeah, that's what we charge. So I said, okay.
Wow.
Not doing that. So my next thought was, I called back the hotels, and I called the Four Seasons, the Grand Wailea, and the Ritz-Carlton. And I called their wedding and events department. And I said, I am going to be staying at your hotel. I am coming to get married. I am getting married on the public beach, but I need a wedding planner. Mm-hmm. Who do you use for wedding planning? Who do you recommend? Each hotel gave me a list of, you know, three or four companies and people. And there were two or three names that were on all the lists. So I figured if Ritz-Carlton, Four Seasons, and Grand Wailea endorse these companies, they have to be good. So then I called those three companies, and I wound up hiring a wedding planner. It was a couple $100. It was maybe like $500 or $600, and it was the best money spent. So she, and again, Hawaii is a wedding factory.
Uh-huh.
So they helped us get the minister. We had a private appointment to get our wedding license. They have a woman who presses the wedding dress that you can pick up. They have a florist to do the flowers. They have an array of officiants from all different religions, non-religious, different types. They help you do that. They help you, you know, pick the vows, what type of ceremony you want. And then they have photographers and a car. So they have an array of photographers, standard wedding photos, this one, that one. And so we spent like $600 on the wedding planner. And then we took the most expensive category of photographer, which was journalistic photography. So not the wedding event portrait person.
So describe for people what the difference is. Journalistic photography.
So our photographer basically shot, you know, in our ceremony, the whole thing from getting out of the car to walking to the beach to getting married, walking up and down the beach a couple times, was maybe about 20 minutes all told. It was very quick. I think I have 800 photos because he basically took photos as soon as the car pulled up in almost like a documentary fashion. Shots of
telling
everything
the story.
And then walking around us, different perspectives, and then up and down. So if you, once a year on our anniversary, we sit down in front of the computer and we play the DVD of all the photos.
How cool.
Oh, wow.
And there are so many of them in sequence like that. It's almost like watching a movie.
Oh, wow. Wonderful.
So we had a few poses at the end. But for the most part, it's just action shots, candid. They're all candid. A traditional wedding photographer is going to do all the posed photos that you see in the classic shots. And so that was it. So part of what made it so successful was hiring the wedding planner, who just basically assured us that the quality of the people we were going to deal with were going to be great and that they were going to show up.
Yeah, yeah.
And they know exactly where to go on the beach and exactly what time the sun is going to set and which beaches are public and are great for that. Because again, Hawaii is a wedding factory. So this happens. They do this all the time, all day long, multiple times a day. And everything was exactly as advertised and perfectly seamless. The whole thing was seamless.
It's so amazing because I've spoken to many people who have had very expensive, at minimum, six-figure weddings. And seamless is not a word I hear.
You know, not at all. No, I mean, I carried my dress and the announcements on the plane. We got there. We got the rental car. We drove to the hotel. I dropped my dress off. We had the meeting. And we spent most of the time just laying on the beach watching all the couples walk through getting married and the different positions that they go to on the hotel property to get their photos taken and all that kind of stuff. And then, I mean, it was great.
So what I'm getting to understand from your story is that you eloped, but you didn't miss out on anything.
No. We eloped because we really wanted to really be together and to focus our attention entirely on one another and the event. And in order,
exactly.
You're getting better and better at the sound effects, David. We're gonna send you a piece of cake during the break for that.
We're getting love from the booth. I think that's very special.
Well,
but in order
to achieve that, a byproduct of that is that no one else is there, and so you have to be willing to accept the repercussions of that in order to be able to just focus entirely on each other. And, you know,
that's
people always ask me, oh, how was it? Was it terrible? And were people upset? And yes, there were some people who were upset. There were some people who didn't care. There were some people who were really mad. But 13 years later, people have almost forgotten. Nobody cares. You know, some people still aren't even married, you know, and
uh-huh.
So, I mean, you know, the longer you stay in it, the less and less people will care. But the two people who care the most, me and my husband, to this day, totally worth it.
We're going to talk a little bit more about reactions and how you broke the news. We're going to take a little break, a little musical break, and then a sponsor break. This is a track by Eliki Soul.
Pressure building, gotta get my
This program is brought to you by Chefs Collaborative, a national nonprofit network with a mission to inspire, educate, and celebrate chefs and food professionals building a better food system. Chefs Collaborative members work to make sustainable practices second nature for every chef in the United States. Chefs Collaborative was founded in 1993 by visionary chefs including Rick Bayless and Alice Waters, who acknowledged the influential role of food professionals on our food choices, our collective personal health, the vitality of cultures, and the integrity of the global environment. Chefs Collaborative believes that the greater culinary community can be a catalyst for positive change by expanding the market for good food and helping to preserve local farming and fishing communities. Change menus, change lives. Learn more about Chefs Collaborative at chefscollaborative.org.
Welcome back. We're here with Jennifer Leozzi. We're talking about how to elope. You've got a video that you sent me.
We did the video on our 10th anniversary. Oh. And, we're really fortunate and we have lots and lots of stuff. And on our anniversary, we really don't exchange gifts. We typically spend the day together and then go to dinner. But 10 is kind of a good big milestone. So I arranged to have this video made and I didn't tell him what we were doing. Oh. I just sort of orchestrated what he was wearing and said, we have to be someplace at this time. And then we went and then we did it. So it was a surprise. And now we have it for posterity.
I love it. I'm going to share the audio with it now.
It's okay. Wonderful.
Okay, have a listen.
When we met, his English wasn't great. He just smiled a lot.
I had to do something.
We both grew up on the water.
I grew up in the south of France.
I was born and raised in Honolulu.
I'm a chef.
I went to cooking school at L'École d'Escoffier at the Ritz in Paris.
Nous parlons français à la maison.
He just said we only speak French at home.
Except when she's mad. She only speaks English when she's mad. After 3 years together, we never talk about getting married.
Until one night at the South Beach Wine and Food Festival.
I just decided it was time.
He looks at me and says, I think we should get married.
We eloped.
It was the most magical moment of my life. On the beach alone, our photographer was our witness.
I can't believe it was 10 years ago.
I'm Jennifer Leozzi, and I'm in love with Laurent Gras.
I'm Laurent Gras, and I'm in love with Jennifer Leozzi.
Je t'aime le plus, toujours et toujours.
I love you the most, and I will love you forever.
Oh, we're all like kind of like tearing up in here. Joanne's face is like all red.
Yeah, I got a little goosebumpy there, and I don't think it's because of the air conditioning.
That is so beautiful. So again, that was a surprise 10-year anniversary gift.
Yes.
Wonderful. Oh my gosh. I have to kind of collect myself because I was just. This is the fourth time I listen to it, and every time I still get really goosebumpy, like you say.
When we had it done,
whatever that was.
I sent the link to different people, via text after we had it done, and a girlfriend of mine got it, and the text I got back from her was like, I just watched it, and I'm like crying hysterically in the aisle at Dwayne Reed.
The coolest thing was learning that you speak French.
I do. And my episode today that aired of my show, the second half is in French.
Oh, that's amazing. So your show, Tech Bites, you can catch Jen on Tech Bites. When do you?
At 11 a.m. on Thursday mornings.
Okay. So let's talk about the serious part here. Family, friends, reactions.
So we had the beautiful announcements that we had, addressed and stamped, and I think like 100 of them or something like that, that we drove to the post office the next day and mailed them from Maui. So we knew that that wave would take about probably a week to get to people. We called our parents and siblings the next day.
Okay, you and called them. What did you say? So hey, by the way. Hey, mom. Hey, sister. Guess what?
So it went sort of like, hi. Yeah, Laurent and I are in Hawaii. We just got married yesterday.
And that's what your mom said.
My mom was like,
"That was a quote."
That was a quote. Direct quote.
She said, "Wait, what? Where are you? I'm in Hawaii." No, wait a minute. She was traveling. She lives in Hawaii, and she was traveling. I think she was in an airport or something like that. And it just took time to process. My father was actually out of the country traveling, so I had to wait to tell him a few days later until he got back into the country because I couldn't even call him. I think Laurent's sister was at a barbecue or something, maybe, and she was like, oh, hi, yeah, oh, oh. You know, there was a lot of that.
Oh, right, his family,
great,
too.
Great. Well, and his family's in France. Uh-huh. They're French. And because that's where he's from. So they were all over there. And, you know, so it was what it was. We just sort of called them and did it. And then I had beautiful photo albums made with Japanese washi papers and things like that. So we had the photos, and then we made photo albums for our parents and sent framed photos to our siblings and some of our special
relatives. I wonder what it was like for them to receive it. Did anyone cry? Or was anyone like really deeply offended? I think that's what people are afraid of. They don't want to hurt other people's feelings. The wedding, the way you did it, it was for you guys, but a lot of people have weddings for everyone else.
Well, you know, our families are fairly small, and you know, we don't have really large extended families. And, you know, Lon and I are in New York. His family's in France. I have family in Hawaii. He was working in California. So we're also very spread out in a geographical sense. We're also older, in our 30s. We, you know, had left the home, been, you know, paying our way and living independent lives. So I think the combination of everything, you know, I think, of course, people maybe were disappointed that they couldn't be there. I think they were happy for us. We'd been together for a few years already. It was maybe a little awkward for a little bit, but I don't think anybody was angry or upset in a serious or profound way. I think also I never talked about getting married.
Mm-hmm.
I was not one of those
one day
people growing one of those, you know, girls growing up talking about, you know, getting married and my dress is going to be like this and I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that. I, you know, as Lauren said in the video, we never talked about getting married. I never talked about getting married. So, you know,
and there it was. Did you at any point feel guilty that you weren't including family or friends?
Not really.
Oh, say that louder.
Not really.
And that's,
you don't
amazing.
Want to hurt anybody. You don't want to hurt anybody's feelings, but it's my wedding.
Yeah.
The other thing is that a couple of years prior, like maybe a year or two prior, my sister got married.
Uh-huh.
She had a destination wedding in Las Vegas.
Okay.
No,
no shotguns.
No weaponry. Lots of people. My mom is an attorney and a judge, so she married my sister.
Oh, and you could do that?
You can do that if you're a judge. She got admitted into the bar for Nevada and married them. And so it was not a large wedding, but it was definitely a big production wedding.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And while it was all happening, even though Lauren and I had not talked about getting married, I didn't think I was going to get married, and it wasn't really on the horizon, I told my family, this is it. This is it. This is the big wedding in our family. Whatever you need to do, you need to do it now. There's not going to be another one. I'm telling you. Mm-hmm. You need to wear a hat in church, have a mother of the bride thing, do a shower, have a toast, like whatever anybody's been thinking about doing at a family wedding, do it now. Because when this train leaves the station, it ain't coming back. Because
mm-hmm.
if I get married, you're getting a postcard. That's it.
So they were warned.
So I was foreshadowing without really knowing. But I put that out there. And then, you know, afterwards, my mom said, well, you know, I kind of can't believe that. I'm like, I told you when my sister was getting married.
There you
got to
go.
Do it. And she's like, yes, I know you told me, but I didn't think that it was
I didn't think you were serious.
Or serious. And I was like, when am I ever not?
I think that ultimately, you know, however you want to plan your wedding, you want to be proud of it. And if that means having however many hundreds of people or having no people, because you sound very proud of
your
wedding.
It's very personal. I think getting married, like anything in life, anything that's a relationship or that's a part of your, you know, personal life, your personal space, your emotional and spiritual life, it's all very personal. And what is the right fit for one person is not the right fit for another person. And I think, you know, to point, I can circle us back to the dress, you know, have a custom fit wedding. Make the wedding fit you. Make the dress fit you. Don't try and shoehorn yourself into somebody else's dress or somebody else's wedding.
I love that. I love that. Now, on the beach, it was a public beach, as you said.
Public beach. We got married at sunset at McKenna Big Beach.
And people are laying out on the sand.
People are surfing. Families are there, swimming, dogs. You know, I mean, it's a public beach in Hawaii.
What a snapshot of life. People doing their things, whatever they were up to that day. So gorgeous. I love your story, Jen, so much.
Thank you.
It's super inspiring. And I don't want to just inspire people. And, well, you know, let's talk about the plus sides. You saved a ton of money.
We saved a
ton.
Fuck ton of money.
Not just a ton. A fuck ton.
Unbelievable.
What are the
money.
Other plus sides to eloping?
Well, you don't have to plan something as big. I didn't have to negotiate international travel for a bunch of people. I didn't have to negotiate, you know, big room reservations and all the things that come to planning a multi-day event, maybe where you live or outside of where you live. So there's a huge planning impact. It also, you know, you're going to have someone on who's been a bridesmaid too many times, maybe. And I know somebody out there is listening who had to go to a wedding, a destination wedding on like Memorial Day weekend, and use their vacation days and a bunch of money to buy a plane ticket and stay in a hotel to go be guest number 78 at somebody's college friend's wedding. So, you know, people want to celebrate with you and they want to be a part of it, but people have lives and budgets and other considerations also. And sometimes it's hard for people to say, no, I don't have $2,000 to spend to come to your destination wedding and buy you a gift and do all those things. So I think there's also a part of it where, you know, we sent people announcements. We wanted them to know. We did something with Laurent's family in Europe. We did something with my family in New York. But after that, it also, the fact that we did what we wanted to do allowed other people to acknowledge and celebrate our marriage how they wanted to.
Right.
So there, we did get gifts, even though we did not register. Interestingly enough, you get a lot of bowls. Cut glass bowls, bowls from Tiffany, lacquer bowls from Japan, little bowls, big bowls. You get a lot of bowls. And I don't know why. I don't know if, like, you walk into the wedding section somewhere and it's just all these bowls, but we got a lot of bowls.
I'm going to have to research that if that's a traditional thing. That's very funny.
I'm telling you, it's funny. We would get these packages and be like, what's this? And be like,
a bowl.
It's a bowl. It's a beautiful cut glass bowl from Tiffany, but it's a bowl.
Maybe
I don't
know. Supposed to fill it with love. Some kind of, oh.
Okay.
Or not that kind of bowl. Totally just getting that now.
Is that a Maui reference?
Maui Wowie.
Maui Wowies.
Yeah.
I love how, you know, I just want to inspire people to think about all the different ways they can get married.
Yes. I think, you know, if you want to step back from the idea of eloping, because that is, I think, terrifying to some people who feel an immense pressure to do whatever it is their family wants them to do or they think they're supposed to do, you know, make the wedding again that fits you best, whatever that is. But if you do want to elope, do not tell anyone.
Do not invite the cousins.
Because people will have an opinion about everything.
Yes, that's right.
And then people will know that they're not going to be there.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Oh, there you go.
Versus like, oh, it already happened. I'm not there. Oh, okay.
Well, for those who are terrified about the idea, thank you for listening this far. And for those who love the idea of eloping and find it very liberating, because Jen has a success story.
13 years later, no one cares.
No one's mad. No one cares. Do it. Save a ton of money. Destination thing.
Have a great time.
Have a great time, and it'll be all for you guys.
And
right?
Do all the things you want to do, whatever the you know, the talismans or the touch points are. Of what make a wedding ceremony important to you? Is it food you're going to eat, music you're going to listen to, clothes you're going to wear, vows you're going to exchange, you know, superstitions of the old and the borrowed and the blue? Whatever the meaningful things are for you, do them.
You do
we
it.
Did them. You yeah. don't need an audience to acknowledge them.
Ah, there you go. Then you can take pictures of it and share it with your Facebook audience.
Yes.
There you go.
Yes.
Thank you so much for being here,
Jen. Thank you for having me.
Thank you, best friend, Joanne.
Yeah, thanks for the cake.
Thank you, Cupcake Market. We're ending on our track, Love is Love, Joni Leeds and the Nightlights. So everybody. This show, Wedding Cake, is produced by Heritage Radio Network, a nonprofit, member-supported radio station devoted to all things food. Help keep Heritage Radio Network alive by becoming a member today. Go to heritageradionetwork.org and click on the beating heart to donate now. Thank you.
Listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Fresh Pickings is a podcast by Heritage Radio Network presented by Bob's Red Mill. Love learning about food? Get more superfood for your brain with the featured podcast miniseries, Fresh Pickings. Go to bobsredmill.com/freshpickings.
Farro is an ancient grain with an impressive pedigree clouded by tenuous designations and contradictory classifications. But at the end of the day, it's delicious, versatile, and relatively accommodating grain. So we're going to hopefully clear up some of the confusion and understand farro a little better. To do that, I'll be talking to Linda Palacio, host of A Taste of the Past, about this grain's storied history. Then I'll head into the Roberta's kitchen to get their porridge recipe and find out why the Roberta chefs are so fond of farro. Welcome to Fresh Pickings. I'm your host, Kat Johnson. Stay tuned. You may know that farro is one of the so-called ancient grains, along with quinoa, buckwheat, chia, and more. As the name implies, ancient grains are those that have been changed very little by selective breeding from their original domesticated varieties. In other words, they're basically the same as they were 10,000 years ago. These days, ancient grains is kind of a buzzword. You'll see it in newspapers' food sections, on Cheerios boxes. Even Papa John's gluten-free crust is claiming ancient grains as ingredients. But obviously, they're not new. And in the past, they were better known as heritage grains. Here at Heritage Radio Network, that word holds a lot of meaning for us. So to talk about what heritage actually means, I went to Patrick Martins, who founded Heritage Foods USA and Heritage Radio Network. Patrick, can you tell us exactly what heritage means when we're talking about food?
Well, on the most basic level, Kat, a heritage breed is one that's been unchanged by selective breeding or genetic modification. I founded Heritage Foods USA to create a market for heritage breeds of turkey, pork, beef, and chicken. Farmers who grow these breeds can't rely on commodity markets because the animals take time to grow. They just aren't suitable for factory farming, and that's a good thing. Heritage genetics preserve biodiversity, and ours are raised without antibiotics using traditional farming methods. Plus, they taste a hell of a lot better.
I will vouch for that. So does the same concept apply to heritage grains?
Totally. In the same way that heritage breeds haven't been changed to suit factory farming, these heritage grains haven't been modified either. These older strains of wheat and grains are gaining more and more attention because they taste better, they're better for the world.
So in the case of meat and plants, heritage not only means traditional, it means that it's better for our health and the environment.
Yes! Eat more heritage foods!
When we're talking about ancient grains, farro is about as ancient as they get.
I'm talking farro with Linda Palacio, host of A Taste of the Past here on Heritage Radio Network. Linda is a culinary historian and the perfect person to take us back in time. What's the story with farro, Linda? How old is it really?
Farro dates to the inception of domesticated plants and the advent of farming in Mesopotamia, or the Fertile Crescent. So we're talking about 12,000 to 9,000 BC. For a long time, farro fed almost the entire Mediterranean and Near East. It's been found in the tombs of Egyptian kings and is said to have fed the Roman legions.
Wow, that's pretty old. So is the farro that we eat today the same as what the Egyptians and the Romans ate?
Farro is a term commonly used when referring to three ancient wheat varieties, or triticum. Today they're very popular in Italy. Spelt, the first variety, is called farro grande, or big farro. Emmer, which is Hebrew for mother, is called farro medio, or medium. And the third and smallest of the varieties is einkorn, which is German for one kernel. The Italians call that one farro piccolo, or little farro.
So with all of these differences, who's eating what and where?
Regional differences in what is grown locally and eaten as farro, as well as the similarities between the three grains, has definitely led to some confusion. Emmer is the most widely available in the United States and by far the most common variety grown in Italy. The mountain regions of Tuscany and Abruzzo are covered in it.
So why is emmer so popular?
Emmer is considered higher quality for cooking than the other two grains, and it's sometimes called the true farro. Spelt is much more commonly grown in Germany and Switzerland, where people use it in much the same way, as is épeautre, or French for spelt, in France, and might therefore also be called farro. Emmer is often confused with spelt, though it is entirely a different species. To make things even more confusing, farro and barley are often referred to interchangeably because of their similar characteristics.
So when exactly did farro become popular in the U.S.?
Some would say that farro is an overnight sensation in modern cuisine. It's actually been on menus in the United States for several decades, though historically it was rarer and harder to get. In fact, American chefs used to fight for supply, as farro allocation here was like fine wine. Thanks to increased availability and the ever-growing interest in rustic Italian food, farro has grown exponentially in popularity in the last few years.
Whenever I look out of the Heritage Radio Network studio, I look right into the Roberta's dining room. I usually get really hungry for pizza, but sometimes I have to explore the other parts of the menu. One of my favorite non-pizza items at Roberta's is the porridge. So I went inside the kitchen to ask Chef Jackie what goes in this dish. Hi, Jackie. Thanks for having me in the Roberta's kitchen today.
Yeah, it's a pleasure. Welcome.
So tell me about this dish.
This is our farro porridge. It started out, we actually did a version of this dish in the winter, so it was a little bit heartier. We were doing it with kale and some other winter veg. But as spring rolled around, we kind of just wanted to create this lighter version of it because it was pretty popular. Would you like to hear about it?
Yes.
So we just cook the farro really simply, just in water with a little bit of salt. That's it. And then on the pickup, we mix it with a pea puree that is seasoned with shiradashi, which is just a Japanese dashi base. It gives it a lot of oomph, you know, that little, like, in the back of your brain flavor that you're not really sure what it is. A little bit of Parmesan cheese, some English peas, and grilled asparagus. Right now we're using fava leaves. Sometimes we use pea leaves. It really just depends. And then we are finishing it with some mint and arugula, which we're getting from our garden.
Why did you decide to put a farro dish on the menu at Roberta's?
Well, it's just really a versatile grain. Pretty popular right now, actually. People really are into grain bowls and stuff like that. So, I mean, including myself, when I go out to eat, it's like what I want to eat, some grains and veg and, you know, light and healthy. So that's kind of how we came to that.
Do people usually have this as a meal by itself?
Yes.
Nice. Or with a pizza.
Or, yeah. Yeah, everything on our menu pairs well with pizza.
Yes. And tell me some other ways that you like to cook and eat farro, either at the restaurant here or at home.
At the restaurant, because I have access to certain equipment, like a deep fryer, I really like doing crispy grains, crispy farro. So cooking it and then letting it air out a little bit so it loses some of the moisture, and then frying it and mixing it into other grains so you get that nice little crunch.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, thanks, Jackie. This is awesome, and I can't wait to eat this.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Thanks to Chef Jackie of Roberta's for sharing tips for using farro. You can find the recipe for Roberta's porridge at bobsredmill.com/freshpickings. Be on the lookout for the next episode of Fresh Pickings. In the meantime, you can learn more about Bob's Red Mill's favorite ingredients and check out some delicious recipes and great coupon offers at bobsredmill.com/freshpickings. Bob's Red Mill is a believer in good food for all. That's it for today. I'm Kat Johnson. Thanks for joining us.